This is Mo and McGee on Fantasy.
Welcome back, folks. Mo and McGee on Fantasy, bringing back the strategy theme, buy and sell war room. Might even put one on the board here. We'll see. Let's start it off hot, straight to the auction block. Jaylen Waddle, are you trying to buy him or sell him?
Oh, this is tough, Kevin. He's had a 40-yard catch in all three games. I think, you know, they're going to see the Bills again. The Bills are one of the toughest defenses in football. They're just ridiculously good. I know they've had some injuries, but
yeah, they're missing four players in that secondary.
Yeah. But so far it's been 17, 40, and 15. He's wide receiver four. He's not going to finish wide receiver four, but I think this is a pure hold for me. You probably got Waddle around, you know, round four, round three, maybe even round five in some drafts, just because people were scared off because of Tyreek. I think this is a hold. He's gotten, you know, decent target share each game. And I think he's just too explosive.
Yeah, usually you're concerned about long touchdowns, but that is Jaylen Waddle's game. For that reason, I think you kind of give an excuse on those. I think the main reason he's a hold for me and sell later is the next two games at Cincinnati, at the Jets, both teams that have tried to throw the ball almost every play, like as much as they possibly can. It's a good chance. Either of those games could turn into a shootout. He puts up another, you know, 25 plus point game. Keeps bidding up that price a little bit more. People start talking about how he's top tier elite, and you can unload him for, you know, a guy that's, you know, probably a little more safely standing in that territory, or, you know, offload for potentially a decent running back. Try to fill out that depth a little bit more.
I know we're not to question time. That's next episode. But would you trade Jaylen Waddle for Amon-Ra St. Brown?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
I would.
Just so Amon-Ra Brown is like the safer guy that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think, well, no, not who I'm talking about, but I think he's very narrowly in that category. Just because, you know, the route tree, you know, you're going to see probably the guy scored touchdowns all the fucking time. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Obviously, you know, health is going to play into that quite a bit with, you know, how's his ankle look coming out of this week, but I probably wouldn't make that trade. Those points are just going to be a little bit more consistent, whereas Jaylen Waddle is going to have your week-winning weeks and your potential bust weeks, especially playing across from Tyreek Hill. And they're not going to be trailing in every fucking game like they have to this point.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, a potential sell, maybe a hold. You know, it's going to be really tough to buy him anyway, so.
Yeah. How about next on this list? I've put Jamal Williams and Khalil Herbert. You could throw Alexander Mattison in the mix. So you have a premier running back that goes down. You have the handcuff. Are you buying or are you selling that handcuff, or are you holding them?
I think I've tried to do this every year, where I've targeted Alexander Mattison on teams I don't have Dalvin Cook. And then as soon as Dalvin goes down, I throw out some ridiculous trade offer with Alexander Mattison in there. I think the problem with that strategy is this is why you drafted these guys. You drafted Alexander Mattison so you could have an RB1 if ever Dalvin Cook misses time. You know, fortunately for DeAndre Swift, Montgomery, Cook owners, it sounds like all the injuries are somewhat minor. You'll have them back soon. You know, if DeAndre Swift was gone for the next 7 weeks, You know, you're keeping Jamal Williams. Right now, I think Jamal Williams is an excellent sell because, you know, we mentioned in episode one, but DeAndre Swift most likely out for 2 weeks due to the bye in week seven. So you're only giving up 2 weeks of Jamal Williams for potentially a guy who could be successful for you week seven and beyond. And that's really kind of what you're looking at with these three guys is, can I sell them for a piece that I can use more than 1 to 2 weeks here and there? What's your thought process?
Yeah. That's the ideal case, but in my experience, people don't like trading for handcuffs. They, you know, when that injury happens, you know, they get a little pissed off that you got lucky and that's where the injuries went. You know, that they're a little more resistant to the trade. If I think Jamal Williams might buck that trend a little bit with his opportunities, as you mentioned, and also having taken over some of that work. What I like to do in this situation is try to trade one of my other running backs and try to, you know, bolster a different position. Or, you know, potentially package a running back and somebody else for a better running back, and then have this handcuff fill in for a couple weeks, because on a week to week basis, there's going to be different guys that become, you know, playable for fantasy. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity in just being able to use that RB2 spot as kind of a, turnstile or like a revolving door where, you know, just kind of fill that spot in. And I look at an opportunity like this, can I move one of my other running backs, you know, potentially my current RB2, have these guys fill in the meantime and boost where else I'm weak, or potentially get a better RB1 out of the deal.
Yeah, and that's why I loved drafting guys like JD McKissick and why like Nyheim Hines are so useful on your roster, because, you know, you could use Jamal Williams for the next 2 weeks, like you mentioned, bolster another part of your lineup, maybe trade if you have like a Tony Pollard maybe, or yeah,
Michael
like
Carter
that. Yeah, trade them away, use Khalil Herbert, and then by that time, if you don't have any solution, plug in a Nyheim Hines for a game. He'll get you 10 mm-hmm. points PPR. Plug in JD McKissick. He'll get you 10 points PPR. And then you can kind of piecemeal it. You know, I've hammered this, I think, every episode. You do not want to be starting three running backs in fantasy football unless you lucked yourself into three really good ones. You know, in PPR especially, you're just like a guy like James Robinson. Super solid, productive, right? But he's not getting any catches. And a ceiling game for James Robinson is like he has to have 100 rushing yards and multiple touchdowns. Whereas a guy like, I don't know, random wide receiver three, Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen needs 6 catches for 60 yards and gets you 12 points. And then he
tack on a touchdown and, you know, you scored as much as James Robinson did.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really do love the strategy of using that RB2 as more of your flex. Obviously, it's a little more unflexible, pun intended, but you can find useful running backs in PPR.
Yeah. And, you know, that must have been, you know, a little bit of a Freudian slip there, because the next two guys on the list are Adam Thielen and James Robinson. So which of those guys are you
buying?
Sorry,
Kevin. Sorry,
Kevin. And which are you selling?
Very
topical example.
That's a time where old Logan doesn't look at the outline. Adam Thielen is tough for me. I think he's a sell just because this is going to be, you know, 20 points is most likely his ceiling. And so he did hit a ceiling game this week. You try to trade guys at their ceiling. I don't know, due to his first 2 weeks, if there's much value at all. You know, that's kind of where I'm at. He's like a sell high, but it's not as high as where you probably drafted him.
Yeah, I think there may even be an opportunity to buy him somehow low. thinking that somebody's selling him high. Like somebody like, oh, Adam Thielen has a big week. I'm going to offload him. And maybe he's a little bit undervalued. No, I'm not crazy about him. He's not where I valued him. But there's a chance that you can get him for probably pretty cheap. Somebody thinking that they're selling high at him. I don't know. He's one that it really comes down to the price. He could be priced all over the place right now, as high as, you know, a low wide receiver two, and as low as, you know, basically waiver wire trash.
Yeah, I mean, there was a legit video on ESPN that there's people dropping Adam Thielen, like completely just dropping him, which is silly for one, but. You're right. There's people all over the board on Adam Thielen. He's not going to be as bad as he was weeks one and two. I don't know if he's going to be quite as good as he was in week three. He might settle somewhere in the middle and be a little more inconsistent than he has been in the past. And so that's why maybe you're trying to sell at a good value, hold at if you can't get the value.
Absolutely. What about James Robinson?
James Robinson, you probably got him dirt cheap, and this would be an automatic sell for me. You just have to believe that Travis Etienne takes a little bit more over at some point. I know James Robinson is running really well. The Jaguars are playing well with James Robinson. But the explosiveness with Travis Etienne paired with the receiving workload, you know, right now it's like 60-40-ish J-Rob. If that gets to 50-50, you've lost a lot of value because, like I mentioned in the whole spiel I gave before, James Robinson's value comes purely off of running and rushing. And we've seen that work well with guys like Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb, but those guys are supreme talents. James Robinson's good. He's a good player, but he's not supreme talented.
Yeah, and he's been running the ball exceptionally well. Travis Etienne's been running the ball, you know, exceptionally poorly. He's running the stretches versus Robinson's running the slams, but and the work is still 60-40. And I think that speaks a lot to what Jacksonville wants to do. They want to see what they have in Travis Etienne. Can they let James Robinson walk for nothing at the end of the season? Or are they going to have to shell out some cash? They want to see what Etienne has to do. So I think he will be a factor, you know, throughout the rest of the season. And, you know, James Robinson's going to have to score you a touchdown every single week in order to, you know, be valuable as a consistent player.
And right now you can sell him as a pure RB1.
Yeah. Yep. You could probably, RB3 on the year. You can sell. You know, I don't think he's RB3, but he's RB12.
Yeah,
people believe that shit.
And here's the thing: he's scored four touchdowns so far. That's unsustainable. You know, guys like Austin Eckler have done it. Guys like, you know, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley. I would not throw James Robinson into that mix.
Now, Logan, are you actively trying to buy James Robinson as we speak?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But I'm not offering him. I'm not offered anywhere close to RB1 value.
No, absolutely not.
So if someone's going to pay RB2 value, I'll buy him and hope he sits in that RB 15 to 10 range. And, you know, I've paid good money for him. But right now, what I've found is that the owner that I'm currently working with does value him at RB1. So it's been tough.
Yep. Very nice. Yeah. Straight into the war room.
A lot of Thielen and Robinson talk. Let's stop talking about those guys.
Let's talk about some players that are good at football. Just kidding. Into the war room. We're talking about bench management, which I love the war room segment. And I put together the war room questions this week, but it's definitely my least favorite war room so far. So bear with me. But bench management throughout the season, do you have a consistent strategy, you know, kind of end to end, or is it kind of in flux throughout the year, where beginning of the year, this is what I'm thinking, end of the year, this is what I'm thinking?
Yeah, and this is where I think you and me do differ quite a bit. I do have a consistent strategy, but it also falls with my drafting strategy. And my drafting strategy has always been to hammer wide receivers pretty heavily. And so my bench is full of guys like Khalil Herbert, Nyheim Hines, Michael Carter, Eno Benjamin, those kind of guys. It had been Kenny Gainwell previously the last 2 years. But that's usually my bench. And you're seeing it this week. I might get to start Khalil Herbert. And I have a guy that I can plug in at RB2 with Nyheim Hines if I'm desperate. It does allow a lot of flexibility if you can draft well at wide receiver to get off of a position and heavily upgrade your flex, which the best teams I've ever had have had, you know, a flex that is in the top 12 of his position. And if you can get that where you either have three top 12 running backs, which would be incredible. And if you drafted a guy like James Robinson, you might be sitting in that position right now. And, you know, if you drafted a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, you could be sitting in that position where now your bench becomes full trade fodder. Maybe keep a couple of guys to rotate in there. That's usually my year-to-year strategy, is load up, try to get, you know, hit value in one position heavily, and then trade off your heavy assets for some locked and loaded, and keep that bench kind of churning throughout the year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do differ a little bit from that, and it usually it's not all that different, but this year I think it was a little bit more. So usually I'm hammering running backs like crazy. Not even at the, like, just at the end to get those handcuffs. I'm hammering at the beginning of the draft, the middle of the draft, the end of the draft. This year I tried to go a little bit lighter, kind of leave my RB2 a little bit more in flux, and really try to go hard on wide receivers. And what my bench ended up looking like early on in the season, or what my strategy was to, there's a lot of unknown early on in the season. So use a lot of roster moves, kind of pick up and drop guys kind of throughout the week as some of that, you know, information kind of becomes more and more known. Try to capitalize on the unknown by, you know, taking my lottery tickets, taking my shots on these guys, and hopefully he's going to pay out with a couple of them. Julio Jones, you know, I've drafted Romeo Doubs. And as I progress into the middle of the season, kind of switch over to your strategy, get those running backs, be prepared for injuries, that sort of thing. And then late in the year, start looking at playoff schedules.
Yeah, and you kind of hit it at the end there. If you can get out of a position where you're just like, oh, I need to get this guy on my bench because I have three injuries and he might have to start. If you can avoid that and start like, okay, I'm good for the next 2 weeks, but I could use a roster spot on
Jalen Warren.
Jalen Warren, he's been stealing some snaps from Najee Harris. What happens if Najee goes down? He'd be locked and loaded, you know, high-end RB2. And you can play that game more. You know, unfortunately, just due to injuries and stuff, you might not be in that position. But using the bench is more of a farm system almost, where, yeah, you know, you can, like, I don't need these guys, but they could become super useful. And that's where you kind of hit that sweet spot of you pick up a Jalen Warren, you don't need him. You got some other guys, your starters are fine. Najee Harris goes down, and now you have an amazing trade piece somewhere on your roster.
Whoops.
Yeah, well, sorry, that a little stumbled upon a little trade piece.
Oh, whoopsie daisy.
I love this next question, Kevin, because I want to hear you go first and then I'll go.
Oh, no.
Were you not prepared?
No, I
asked your own question. What is your most counter consensus opinion regarding overall fantasy football strategy? So this is what the guys like Matthew Berry, Field Yates, fantasy footballers, this is what these guys are constantly chattering about. Where do you differ from the consensus guys?
Yeah. So I think for this one, I'm a convert this year. Like I was totally on board with what everybody was saying about what I'm about to say until this year. And now I've kind of turned a corner, and I think there's some real value in taking an earlier quarterback. Now, I'm not saying go out and get Tom Brady in round two, but I think there is legitimate value in valuing, your rushing quarterbacks that have high upside for passing, your Lamar Jacksons, maybe less so, but I mean, writing was on the wall for Jalen Hurts. Everybody was all in on Jalen Hurts. He should have been drafted much, much higher. And he wasn't, because everybody thought late QB, it's the way to go. There's not a lot of separation there, but what are we seeing now? You're probably picking up 4 or 5 points on your opponent by playing Jalen Hurts. That's the difference between playing Christian McCaffrey or that's not a good example because Christian McCaffrey's been down, but that's the difference between
Nick Chubb
and Kareem Hunt. Yeah, there you go. It does kind of ebb and flow a little bit more throughout the season, but in general, don't be afraid to pick, the high upside quarterbacks a little bit sooner. You don't have to buy all in on that late QB strategy.
Yeah, and what I've seen this year is pretty much every team that has Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes is doing pretty well. Because they are covering up a lot of other, wounds on people's teams. Just in my three leagues, I've seen that the guys that have Hurts, the guys who have Josh Allen are dominating. And it's because you're right, they're picking up those extra 5-6 points on you every week. When you wait on quarterbacks, such as I did this year, you end up with, Russell Wilson, and not good. You might have ended up with Kirk Cousins, who probably lost you your week in week two. Guys like that have not been very solid. Matthew Stafford, another guy who's had his struggles so far this year. Go ahead.
And to be fair, by taking a late QB, you probably do have one more flex player for when, the season progresses a little bit and there's more injuries. You might be a little bit better off then, but there's such a big value early in the season and even come playoff time if your quarterback can stay healthy to pick up, a marginal but significant advantage.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this question the entire time we've been doing the podcast here, and, I don't know if it's completely counter consensus. But I am so wide receiver centric in everything I do. I want to have three top 20 wide receivers. If it kills me, I way overdrafted them in multiple leagues this year, and it's left me pretty weak. And I think the counter consensus part of it is that, somewhere in my mind, I still think I'm going to be okay, even though I have 2-0-3 starts and another 1-2 start. I think I put a higher value on guys that I've already mentioned, like Nyheim Hines. Like, people rank Nyheim Hines in non-ranked 40th, 50th. And I'm like, I think he's a useful RB3, or I'm going to hold on to Eno Benjamin for way too long, because I think, eventually if he can work out like a 60-40, he'll be usable. And I think the counter consensus part of it is that most people, when they're constructing their teams, try to get you know, two good running backs, three receivers, or three good running backs, two receivers. And I'm like, F it. I want five good receivers and I'll figure out the rest later. And it's left me super weak on almost all my teams because I've, you know, you run the risk of missing. And if you miss on one of those wide receivers, now you're kind of really banged up in other places as well as receivers. So
and it's not even miss. Like, to be fair, I know that you're heavily invested in Chris Godwin, and mm-hmm. what it took was a reaggravation to the leg, and you know, it, all of a sudden you better have hit on the other four.
Yeah, no, it, you know, not to bring up Adam Thielen again, but yeah, in our big league, TKD league, I drafted Godwin and Thielen rounds 3 and 5, and both have been disappointing, and my team's 0-3. You know, why? Because my flex position has been a mess. And when your RB2 is already a mess and your flex is a mess, now you're in deep shit. Also, very fuck quickly, you, Russell
your
Wilson.
Team's a mess. Oh, Russell Wilson, yeah.
Fuck you too, Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, let's ride.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I don't know if it's technically counter consensus, but it is. I'm way stronger into wide receivers than I think the general population is.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Now, that concludes the War Room segment.
Yeah.
And I know on the outline you've put it on the board, but the problem is I agree with you. Uh-oh. I don't think that he'll do that. So okay. I have a different proposition.
All right.
You're a big Tony Pollard guy. I'm a big Ezekiel Elliott guy.
Oh yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott outscores Tony Pollard on the rest of the season.
What's it at right now, Kevin?
5-point difference. I think it's a Pollard lead.
Pollard has 34.5. Elliott has 26, so it's an 8-point lead for Pollard. And I will take that bet, Kevin. I will put it on the board. Pollard scores more PPR points than Zeke Elliott.
You can put it on the board. Yes.
Aaron Judge, 63. 68. yeah. So what people, you know, you kind of buried the lead. I said I don't think Najee Harris finishes as a top 10 running back, which I thought, Kevin, that you would say, you know, he's the workload's there, what, blah, blah, blah. And I was going to say, no, it's not there. He's not going to finish as a top 10 running back, but we don't need to have that conversation because we both agree.
Yeah. And you know, the biggest issue for me is I'm worried about the foot, the Lisfranc injury, is often an injury that you need surgery for. And I don't think that he's going to hold up the whole season. And all you have to do is miss 4 games and you're not in the top 10.
Well, there you go. As simple as that. We will see you folks in that weekend primer episode. And we're going to definitely nail all of our flex plays and bets and everything.
Yeah. We have been, right?
Yeah, for sure. All right. See you, folks.
Bye.